We have Anton Matthews in the studio, and we're going to be talking cycling. Anton, Ken Roberts decided to do this amazing thing, cycle around the world. What was his spur? Why did he decide to do this?
Well, I think it's something which is, for Ken, it's been quite a lifelong ambition. You know, it's one of those things I think even as a boy, he probably thought, I think I'd like to cycle around the world one of these days.
As you do all the time.
As you do, exactly. I mean, but he's a very intrepid chap, and he's physically very fit, always has been. He was born in Lancashire in 1969 and spent his formative years in Wales. But he did have a very successful career in engineering management for about 20 years. And he set off to fulfil his long-held dream to cycle around the world. He's an experienced touring cyclist anyway. I mean, he's done lots of other things. But he comments that the bicycle is nevertheless really just the means of travel rather than an end in itself. And the real challenge is the ability to solve problems. Now, he's had plenty of those, I have to say. I mean, you know, things as diverse as finding enough food to sustain the physical effort, arranging visas, which he had a really, really terrible time.
He had a tough time getting
the Chinese visa because he got it and they gave him 6 weeks, and then they said, well, for 4 weeks it's closed, so you can't go. So he had
you've got a fortnight to cycle across China.
Exactly. So in fact he had to cycle back to a previous place to actually get the visa thing sorted out. In fact, he didn't even cycle back. He flew to an unknown destination, which there is some interesting videos which the policeman's helmet in London gives it away, where he had to come back to get the visa things sorted out.
That's mad.
Which was fascinating.
Absolutely mad, isn't it?
Yeah. And of course he's having to deal with the sort of various changing political situations en route. Again, I think that was part of what happened with the Chinese stop on him going in. And as he says, you know, simply driving oneself forward in the face of adversity and to gain a better understanding of people and places encountered on his journey.
I think to even contemplate doing something like that to me seems so staggeringly massive that I would want to curl up in a darkened room.
It's the sort of thing that's going to take and will have taken him years of thought, and then, you know, going through all the processes of how to actually organise it, you know, let alone
practically
getting his bicycle.
Yes.
He was called Emma, bless her.
Is it a particularly amazing bike?
Oh, I think so. I haven't actually seen it.
But it's a sort of super lightweight, fantastic thing.
Oh, I guess it's lightweight, although probably with all the panniers and stuff he's carrying along with him, the bits and pieces, cameras, he's got sound equipment, which we'll come to later on, how we deal with actually speaking with him when he's in China and in other parts of the world because of the time difference. But it is an amazing machine, and of course I think to date he's had a few punctures, and okay, he's got the bits and pieces to do that with, but I don't think anything major mechanical has gone wrong with it. And if it did, then he'd have to wait there and wait till the part was shipped out there, I guess. But
so he set off, because Eddie's got the website on the screen in front of us in the studio here, and he set off last September 09.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
So he's been going well over a year, and he's reached where now?
Well, he is in China. We last spoke with him when he was just coming towards a place called, I think it was Lanzhou. I've not been very clever at noting actually exactly where he is today, because in fact I've been away. But we do have an interview coming up with him next week on the Saturday Wake Up Show on the 30th. So people are invited, obviously, to listen to that.
Yes, but, I mean, I know you've been regularly in contact with Ken and broadcasting your conversations on Ten Radio.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, when you said on his bike he's got all the kit. And he's having to carry all of that, and there you are actually speaking to him, and he's running a blog and all of that. How technically does that work?
Oh, well, it's a good question actually, because obviously, yes, with the time difference it's difficult, and also because he's not always in a position, you know, we can't rely on a Saturday morning to ring him up and say, oh, hello Ken, are you there?
Yes.
Because actually he may be in the middle, as he has just gone through, he may be in the middle of the Gobi Desert where there's nothing, basically. Mm. And there's an interesting little piece where he talks about loneliness, how he copes with that in his thing. But just to answer your question about the communications thing, what we do is, we use a little bit of technical wizardry, basically. His next door neighbour, John Basley, who always does the interviewing, sends emails to him, some questions, you know, and there's a reasonably set format, but obviously we know that things are changing because we can see what Ken's been up to. Mm. He blogs every evening, it appears.
So you can follow him?
But we follow him all the time. I mean, it's just, and it's wonderful, his journey, because he's also writes his blogs, are very eloquent and amusing sometimes, but also huge insight that he's got. He's got this grasp of being able to convey that, communicate that. He's a brilliant communicator. So what we do is, yes, so we send him the questions. He then sends us back the answers to the questions as sound bites.
Oh, I see.
Okay, when he's got the time, you know, uh-huh. He's in a cafe somewhere or something and he gets a bit of internet connection, which apparently in China is quite good, although he's had one or two times when it's his verboten or whatever the word is in Chinese to say he can't get access. And then when that's done, I get John round and we record the questions, because of course the texture of them may change slightly with the answers that have come.
Right.
And then we do a little
and
bit
you
of
join them together.
Cut and splice. Yeah.
You are
pop
clever. You see the skill of our 10 radio presenters. It's all too much.
It's time consuming, but I mean it is worth it, because again, those are going to be part of the record that Ken will have when he gets back. He'll have all his blogs. Funny enough, I was thinking yesterday, there could be a new type of sort of media, which I was thinking we could call a blog nov. Because his blog, if you put all his blogs together, they do make sense, because they're in time.
Conceptual.
You know, there wouldn't really need to, you know, there's enough there, over 4 years there's going to be enough there to actually probably have more parts 1, 2 and 3, but I mean
it would be most interesting. I mean, it would make a total journal.
Yeah, exactly, it's a total journal. And again, I think hopefully what we see is that the 10 radio interviews that we do month by month, which are, again, they're logged on his website, you can listen to them again, our hope is that they'll be part of that whole chronicle over the 4 years. So it's a commitment all round, but that's what it's about. He's, you know, travelling solo around the world to across principally inhabited continents. And as you say, he set off in September for a journey expected to cover in excess of 45,000 miles over 4 years. So, I mean, that is quite a task.
All by his own power. Yes. So, Anton, I think we've got two small clips to hear.
Yes.
The first one being the longer clip, I think.
Yeah,
is
okay.
That right?
Yeah, no, if you wish, yes. It doesn't matter which way around they go, really. But
do you want to introduce that one?
Yes. We've just been talking about how we do the interview. So, see if you can hear the joins. This is an interview that we did with Ken, which was first broadcast on the Saturday Wake Up Show on the 25th of September, just gone.
Well, good morning, Ken. This is a really special interview today, since it's a year since you left Fitzhead, September the 2nd, 2009.
Hi, John. Really great to be able to chat to you again.
We thought of you especially on September the 2nd, as you marked your first year on the road, Ken. Can you remember how you spent the day?
Very simply, on the road, reflecting on the events, the experiences of the last year, and another truck stop for the night, a small place run by a friendly couple, typical again of so many of the people I met during the course of this venture.
Now, we know you're in the middle of your 3-month west to east crossing of China, Ken, but can you give us a bit more of a picture about where you are, the kind of terrain you're crossing, and the weather conditions that you've got at the moment?
In the final throes of the Gobi Desert, slowed a little by some tough, at times unrideable conditions, gale force winds mostly, and a few unsavoury and persistent bouts of traveller's diarrhoea. Much of the terrain I've been crossing has been bleak, open desert, interspaced with settlements, both large and small, that have grown up around the various oases, where you do encounter some surprises. Cotton grain, for example, or in Turpan, the hottest place in China, vine-covered walkways, and a pretty palatable red wine.
That's good. And so, Ken, after a year on the road, what would you say have been some of the highs and lows that stand out particularly for you in the last 12 months?
Just so many experiences to draw from. A late summer across France, the rawness of Serbia, Christmas in a small Bulgarian village, media interviews in Georgia. But if there's a common thread to the highs, it's the people. Not just the ones I've met on the road, perhaps just for a few moments, or stayed with, but all those who've helped make this venture possible. Family and friends, for example. And the lows, there's certainly been some tough moments, some dark days battling with loneliness in northern Turkey, or an unexpectedly closed Chinese border. But in a project of this nature and duration, I suppose they're to be expected. But again, the support of family and friends has been a huge help.
One thing which I've been surprised at is the extent to which we've been able to stay in touch, Ken, during this last year. I mean, there's been a lot of email correspondence and phone calls, both on and off the radio for us. Many people around the village are impressed with your strong commitment to communication and the way you share all your many experiences. Are you able to give us a rundown of the kind of comms kit which you're carrying on, Emma, your bike?
At the heart of the kit is my small netbook, essential for writing the blog posts, uploading photos to the website, as well as keeping in touch with family and friends. And alongside it, I've got two digital cameras, one for stills and one for video clips. There's also my GPS receiver I use to log where I've actually been, information that also gets put up onto the website. And if things do go seriously awry, I've a satellite phone that allows me to seek assistance from anywhere on the planet. But for me, the real challenge is trying to use the technology, to harness it in a way that conveys through the website what life on the road is actually like, the highs and the lows, the often gritty reality, whilst at the same time trying to keep it interesting.
Oh, that's interesting, Ken. One thing which has intrigued me was that recent blog posting that you put on your website detailing how you managed to gain an insight into a local gay and lesbian community. I wonder how you managed to engage with people to find out these quite sensitive details about aspects of their lives like this, when really you're travelling pretty briefly through these towns and cities.
Actually, my chance encounter with the quite unfamiliar gay and lesbian scene was back in Central Asia. I've not come across anything similar in China, but there again, I've not been looking. Whilst I'm sure homosexuality is quite lawful here, I suspect there are degrees of tolerance, perhaps more openly accepted in the cities than in the rural communities. But I think that's no different to a lot of other countries.
I was listening to a recent Radio 4 documentary on the growth of Christianity, and I wonder if this is something that you've experienced or witnessed on your travels as well.
Christianity in China is an intriguing one, and its rise had initially taken me a little bit by surprise, as has its state endorsement. But I think Christianity is welcomed by the government, it being seen as helpful in maintaining social cohesion across what is a very diverse nation. And that's seen as being really important here. And how do I come across these people? More luck than anything else, helped, I think, to some degree by the perception that Westerners are more tolerant. And I'm always very careful to reassure people that do take me into their confidence, often sharing some very candid thoughts, that I'll always respect their privacy and not inadvertently reveal their identity.
Ken, I think you must be the only person I've ever come across who's been to the famous Gobi Desert. Have you got any particular memories of this desert that you'd like to share with the Zen Radio listeners?
Lawrence Arabia, it most certainly isn't. Mostly dull grey rocks, the odd sandstone outcrop, really quite bleak and foreboding. And then there's a tremendous, sometimes gale force winds, the sandstorms, the violent electrical activity, and the endless stream of lorries hurtling past. But I think what really plays on the mind is the vast emptiness. True, you can find similarly remote and inhabited regions in Scotland, for example, and yet I think this is different because it is so open, often featureless. It gives it a real sense of being never-ending. So nothing at all like those old TV adverts for Turkish delight.
Well, that's absolutely fascinating, Ken. Congratulations for getting through the desert like that, and we look forward to seeing some of your photographs when you get back. Lastly, would you like to say what your plans are for the next week or so? I wonder if you're staying put where you're based at the moment and doing some local sightseeing, or perhaps you're back on the bike or back on Emma and travelling some quite large distances for your next destination.
Pressing on east, for there's still a long way to go to reach Hong Kong, and I'm conscious that whilst the typhoon season in the southeast of the country will soon draw to a close, the days are getting shorter.
And perhaps you'd like to finish with the usual plug for the website and a plug for the organisation that you're raising funds for.
You can follow my antics, subscribe to the regular blog posts, see the latest photographs by visiting my website www.acrosscontinent.org. where most importantly you can also make a secure donation to the Outward Bound Trust, a UK charity I'm seeking to raise funds for to support their work with young people.
That's great, Ken. Thank you very much, and as I say, happy belated 1 year birthday anniversary, whatever, for you on the road. Look forward to seeing you in 3 years or so, and more sooner than that, look forward to speaking to you in a month's time. Take care now, Ken. Bye bye.
Thanks, John, and Anton, of course. Look forward to chatting again next month.
How fascinating. I didn't hear the joins.
You can notice them occasionally. But
really clever, because it gives us the impression that we are talking to Kenny, even though it's a very, very difficult, almost impossible thing at times to get together to actually
have a regular conversation. Well, when he was travelling across Europe, of course, we were able to just call his mobile phone, and when he was kind of 2 hours difference, that didn't, you know, that wasn't
not
too much of a worry, because it was a little bit later in the day for him. And I think he tends to, it depends obviously on the sort of weather conditions, but I think he doesn't always sort of set off at, you know, at dawn to go, because he's got other things to attend to as well, like maintenance of the bike and getting himself sorted out and thinking ahead where he's going to get to. Which sometimes is quite interesting. Yeah.
Tell us about the Outward Bound Trust connection.
That's something that Ken's been involved with for many, many years, the Outward Bound Trust. I mean, I think he's done a lot of fundraising for them already, but this is definitely a fundraiser for the Outward Bound Trust. I mean, that uses, you know, it's an organisation that uses outdoor experiences and challenges to help young people unlock their potential. And at the heart of the Outward Bound experience is the journey metaphor, physical journeys alongside those of development and discovery for the individual and for the team. There's a belief that we all have undiscovered potential that can be wrought out through adventure, of course, and encouraging people to go out and do things that they at first believe to be impossible encourages, you know, that does indeed encourage the balance between risk, reward and responsibility.
And that leads us on to something that he's calling the road to hell.
Oh, indeed, yeah. Well, one of his blogs, I mean, he talked there in the interview about the Gobi Desert, an unforgiving place, and I love his comment, it's not Lawrence of Arabia. You know, not the romance and the glamour. It's an awfully dull place. And he comments in his blog, which is, again, just it's a short blog, but it's just an example of his wonderful writing. The Road to Hell, he calls it. The Gobi proper, a harsh desert. Negligible vegetation, few settlements. Far more remote, hostile places exist. And yet, it engenders a strong sense of loneliness. Vulnerability, its openness, much of its featureless, stretching far out of sight, appearing to be never-ending, sapping the resolve of the solo traveller. Exacerbated by the constant wind, little diminished by the frequent passing of lorries. The carriageway soon fades, then a traffic jam, lorries backed up, for several kilometres at least. A few drivers choose not to wait, passing perilously close to those waiting patiently, presumably hopeful of no sudden oncoming traffic. The few cars on the road share my vulnerability in the chaos, combined effect of roadworks ahead and the only fuel stop for miles. Beyond it, the last vestiges of tarmac disappear. Rough, unmade road, potholed, dusty, for 60 miles. The road to hell.
Ooh, I can see it.
He's got a wonderful way of painting with words. Yeah, it is amazing. There is a little clip there which perhaps we could play, where he talks about loneliness and how he copes, you know, in a situation like that. And even, you know, even when he's actually in a town somewhere, he doesn't know anybody. He's got to find somewhere to stay the night.
He can't speak the language.
Has a problem with the language. Mm. You know, even in Europe, I think he does fairly okay in sort of French and German and stuff like that, probably. But
the Bulgarian,
exactly. Language and so on. Yes, I think he probably finds.
So let's hear that small clip about how to cope with loneliness.
Language difficulties, punctures, the odd minor ailment. These are all problems you expect on the road. They're solvable, sometimes with a bit of ingenuity, some lateral thinking perhaps. You just get on with them. But then there's loneliness, never far away, lurking, waiting for the moment to reappear, catching the solo traveller unaware. You may be in the most beautiful of places, surrounded by the most kind, generous and hospitable people, and still be immensely lonely. But is it such a terrible thing? I find myself reflecting on what I've left behind to spend 4 years venturing on a bicycle around the world. Family, friends, a green lush land, cosy, comfortable, familiar, a reassuringly simple world.
truly beginning to appreciate what I have to return to. But then the insidious self-doubt, sometimes destructive thoughts, gnawing away at one's self-confidence, the perils of an idle mind. You tell yourself this will pass, you know it will, just a squall. And yet it seems so quickly entrenched and willing to budge, like a parasite growing stronger as it saps your own strength. Pedals seem harder to push, colours ebb away, sounds fade. You learn to cope because you have to. Sometimes the very things you might think would exacerbate the situation help push it back into the shadows. News from home, the smallest of tidbits, mere morsels. An email from friends, however brief. The anonymous ticking over of the website visitor counter, knowing that someone somewhere is thinking about you, however fleetingly. Family photographs of growing nieces, celebrations, simple gatherings. And keep the grey matter occupied, on the road, in the tent, every waking moment. Leave no room for loneliness to creep in to gain a foothold, so hard to dislodge. Listening to music, composing the next blog post, plans for the next few days, just doing stuff, enough, but not excess, or else you overwhelm yourself, making yourself vulnerable to another episode. Writing about, talking about, discussing it is very cathartic. It's not an affliction, an unspoken evil, simply a natural consequence of travelling alone through an environment where communication with others is difficult, either because there are few people or a language barrier. Not surprising, humans are, after all, a social creature, nothing to be embarrassed about. Being amongst other people, even if the conversation is limited to just a few words, can make a good deal of difference. The merest of social interaction, a simple smile, a warm handshake, just a nod. A little kindness towards strangers, it all helps. But most of all, interaction with native English speakers, or those who understand the real nuances of the language, of Western culture, the unspoken subtleties. A real craving, seeking out Western-style cafes in the cities, the odd expat bar, or simply staying with those working overseas, Australians, Americans, Brits, it doesn't really matter. No longer alone, just for a moment.
That takes tremendous resolve, though. What he's doing is making a structure in his existence now.
Yeah.
Coping with loneliness. Mm. I mean, he filling the time so loneliness can't creep
in. Can't creep in, that's right. That's
phrase.
The point that he makes. I mean, and again, I think that kind of mindset is something that, again, he will have been planning for years before he even went.
You can't just learn that.
Having done his other journeys and stuff, 1,000 miles across the UK, he'll have... Okay, you're in familiar territory, nevertheless, you've still got that kind of, got to keep, as he said, the brain occupied.
Brain training.
Exactly.
Yes, absolutely fascinating. Anton, I think you've just got something you also want to read to us.
Well, there was one other blog which I just thought was, again, wonderful and indicative of what he does. Now, he said in that interview, too, and I do appeal to people, it doesn't matter what the news is. It doesn't matter if you don't know Ken. Go to his website. It's very simple to just send him a little message, say, you've had a lovely day and the sun shining and
Anton, remind us now and at the end what the website is.
Oh, the website, okay, it's www.acrosscontinents.org. Nice
that's
and simple.
Easy.
It's
easy
to remember. Acrosscontinents.org. Do go there and just say hello to Ken. He may not come back to you immediately, but he'd be delighted to hear from anybody on Angleterre, as they say. quickly, if I'll finish, if I may, with this other little blog, which is Arrive the Cavalry. This is a recent blog, just a couple of days ago. A very welcome beer, not back in Dunhuang as I'd earlier feared, on the train. I'd jostled my way through several carriages in search of some American students who'd come to my aid back at the station. Wanted to thank them for all their help, without which I seriously doubted I'd ever have been able to be on board, not with the bike at least. Eventually, finding them, I'd been invited to join them for a drink. Their arrival at the station earlier in the evening had been fortuitous, the timing impeccable. They were all part of a study program, refining their language skills and learning about Chinese culture. Joe, one of the group leaders, had stepped forward to offer help with reassembling the bike. He'd also discreetly guided me away from the meet of station staff and the odd police officer who, I sensed, might soon thwart my plan to travel on the sleeper. A few railway officials drifted over. The words were incomprehensible, but the tone seemed lighter, more encouraging. Then a young policeman arrived, not to impede, but to help. He'd escorted us to the train, let us board early before the rush. I sought to convey my gratitude in just a few words and lots of warm handshakes. I'd foolishly thought that would be the end of the evening's drama. Hadn't allowed for the chief guard, who'd been summoned by the carriage attendant. Suspected one of my fellow passengers had complained at the presence of the bike, despite what I thought was a pretty reasonable effort at stowing it so as to cause as little inconvenience as possible to others, and all rather ironic, given the general chaotic nature of the sleeper. Another impasse. I'd 14 hours and the train was underway. Only place I was going was Lanzhou. The chief guard was insistent that the bike be moved to one of the vestibules, and I was adamant that my faithful steed should remain where she was, not least because I thought it the safest place for everyone. Protested the police were content with the arrangement, but he was persistent and I polite. For a while I sought not to understand, then I discovered I'd misplaced, albeit temporarily, the key to the armoured cable anchoring the bike to a bed frame. Wry smiles from fellow passengers. Time to compromise and negotiate the most favourable solution.
He does write beautifully.
He does write,
actually.
Yeah,
really
it's wonderful.
Does.
So I encourage people to go and follow Ken. Mm. You know, and send
an email
to him.
Just some news from home would be
welcome.
In the
yes, just www.acrosscontinents.org, and it's Ken Roberts in.
And also, I believe Facebook.
And he's on Facebook too. Yes? Mm. So if you're a Facebook person, then he can be communicated through there, and videos and stuff. I mean, it is a wonderful website. It's really fun to watch.
Okay.
And see the endeavours of this amazing man.
Well, I'll go home and do the same. I will, and send an email and say that we've spoken about him and thought about him this morning.
He'd love that.
Indeed, and we watch with interest the rest of his life.
Indeed.
Thank you, Anton, very much for coming
in
this morning.
Thank you
and
for
updating
inviting
us
me.
On Ken's travels.
Thank you.
You.